listening to The God Journey, a place where people thinking outside the box of organized religion can share thoughts and conversation along the journey. Here are your hosts and fellow travelers, Wayne Jacobson and Brad Cummings.
Well, welcome back to another edition of The God Journey. Brad, did you read the terminology I gave you, what we're going to use and not use?
You're trying to edit me again, aren't you? You're trying to clean me up.
Well, I couldn't do it after, so I'm trying to head it off a little bit at the first.
Oh, the humor department and I think the email department has registered some support on my behalf.
Oh, I didn't know it was a contest.
Well, I actually got a little email that says, I agree, Brad, that's not such a bad thing to say. He says, I tend to think this whole turn up your toes if someone says, and then I'm not going to say that one, is part of the whole religious thing, especially in the States. It was actually quite refreshing to hear you say, and I think they were referring to my saying pissed off. And she says, ha, ha, ha. So I have some support.
Where's that from?
That's from Melbourne.
Melbourne, Australia.
Hi, Sue.
Interesting enough, we got some email from Reese, and I'll say this, Reese, first, thanks, too. He kind of helped clean up some of that audio we had with the girls interview that had a big hum in it. He cleaned it up for us and sent it back, so those of you that didn't hear it without the hum, it's now humless, and I appreciate Reese for doing that. But he also wrote this. He said, thanks for the latest podcast on Children Unplugged. It was by far the funniest podcast you and Brad have put to air. But don't be too harsh on Brad for that pissed off comment. It certainly boosted his credibility among us Australians, at least the non-religious. I'm like, what is it with these Australians?
Well, you know, I think it was originally a penal colony and...
Whoa, I don't think they want to hear that. Okay, we're already off to a bad start here on the next one. Gee. He also goes on to say this, thanks for all the time you put into the podcast and your live stream website. I'm slowly making my way through your SuperDisc CD. Boy, no one ought to go through that. That's a mess.
SuperDisc.
Trying to reprogram myself from years of almost right but actually very wrong teaching. It's not easy, he says. I wrote him back to just say, yeah, one of the first things we've got to admit is we can't reprogram ourselves. If God doesn't reprogram us, we have no hope.
But yeah.
I think I get the gist of it. I mean, God's obviously pointed out some things in his life. And to get serious about it, I think the show last week, Children Unplugged, also really touched a number of other people's hearts and lives. I mean, talking about children outside the box will probably lead us on a pretty good journey tonight. So we thought we'd spend a little more time responding to some of these letters and taking this bit a bit further. So welcome to Children Unplugged Part 2.
All right.
The sequel.
I had a neat little message from some friends of old. It says, I found the God Journey tonight and I loved it. As Mary and I have been looking for a church, and so far the God Journey, though perhaps not a church per se, is the closest we've come to a perspective that seems to be very much in line with ours. And what was so interesting to this is we were looking for a church because we want our children to get to know God, while fully understanding that it's actually more our responsibility to teach them than it is the organized religious church. So we thought, well, Brad was great. Let's look him up on the net and see if he has anything good going on. So we Googled him. I don't know if I've ever been Googled before, so, wow.
Well, you feel pretty good about that?
Thanks for Googling
me. And what did they Google exactly?
Pastor Brad Cummings.
Pastor Brad Cummings! Woo! I thought we were going to use those words here.
I dropped my titles a while back, and it says, and we found the God Journey. Now, I'm not sure how Pastor and the God Journey got connected, but they said, and they listened to Children
amazing
Unplugged.
It's amazing how God uses Google, I think.
The topic covered in Children Unplugged was exactly what we had been struggling to find answers to. I thought that was so fantastic, because, I mean, this is a great young couple, and they got three fantastic little kids, and to think that they're struggling exactly with that subject matter, and with the technology of today, God can somehow orchestrate, they're just making an inquiry, and taking them right to something that fed their soul. That's fantastic.
It is fantastic. It's also a good reminder, that little comment they had earlier about, we know we're kind of the ones doing this, but we're looking for an institution to do it for us. Doesn't that sum up so well what a lot of us do? I mean, we know maybe this is something we ought to sort out with God, but it's just easier to... Hopefully some expert will be able to do this for me.
Well, I think that's the biggest struggle that parents really struggle with. It's that they feel like somehow they're inadequate, like somehow there's some kind of training or wisdom or education that they should have gotten that they don't have. And it's, I think, out of their inadequacy that they think, oh, I need to find somebody else who's more qualified. When I really kind of think the honest reality of just trying to struggle before God is probably one of the greatest instructors for your kids you're ever going to have.
And absolutely, and the reality that no one is more qualified to demonstrate Jesus to our kids than us. Mom and dad were with him, you know, 24/7, with him around the clock. No teacher, no youth worker, no Sunday school instructor is going to have the impact that our life and example has just by the way we live before them and the way we treat them and the way we take an interest in their lives and how we help them grow. So I think it's just nuts that we think somehow that can happen in someone else's court instead of being ours.
Yeah, it was interesting. Just this past week, I spoke down at a little ladies' luncheon thing, and they asked me this.
Really?
Speak
a ladies'
about,
luncheon?
Yeah, a ladies' luncheon. I look like a lady.
I bet you didn't use pissed off, did you?
No, I cheap shot.
I'm sorry.
it was something about one of the little hand grenades I tossed into their thinking that was exciting to me to just watch unfold. Is, you know, I said a little word about Sunday school. I said, guess what? God didn't put your kids in Sunday school. He put them in your family. Mm. And it's like, just the whole premise that he had a dream in mind, a thought in mind, long before anything else. And, you know, yes, we have something to do in procreation and the bringing forth of children, but I do believe God has an amazing choice when he puts a unique child in our family. I think he's making a statement that he says, this is the best place for me to plant this with what I have in mind. And I think the byproduct of that is we can take real confidence. God has a belief in us that the circumstances and environment in which these children are growing up, in his mind, it's perfect. This is where he set them. And he wants them to grow up right here. Good, bad, ugly, whatever. It's right there that in his mind was the perfect place to put that child.
Oh, that's great. That's a great way to begin our day and think about our kids and not the pressure of having to perform and to make something happen, but God's already put things together and he's using the very real things our family will go through to help our kids come to know who he is.
I had an interesting email. It's from Sarah. She says, thank you so much for airing the webcast, Wayne and Brad. I have longed to hear about where children fit in the journey outside the box. When we came home, we really came home. So far out of our previous boxes that empty, spacious places are sometimes overwhelming.
Wow.
How much easier it is to be in the comforts of predictability. I think that's really true. As a mom of four who homeschools, we're already praying for you. I find myself faced with the reality of falling before God and walking with God in front of my children almost 24/7. Since at the moment, it's raw, messy, and rough. A year ago, we stepped out of a busy pastoral ministry with our main reason being because our children had been far too long neglected. I wanted intimate connection with God more than the identity I'd made for myself in ministry. And one of the first things I heard him say was, whoever welcomes a child in my name welcomes me. So to be honest, I'm learning the basics of how to welcome and receive my children, how to show them through my words and actions that they belong and they are beloved, and that has really started me learning how much I am received into the heart and arms of the Father. This is all I know to do right now because the resistance to me teaching anything is quite tangible. And says, your
every parent knows that.
Yeah, that's true. Says, the Lightstream website has been healing balm in the midst of this. What a beautiful school of the Spirit to learn to facilitate His presence and partner with Him with your children first and then with the world around us. Bless you guys.
Oh, fabulous. Thank you, Sarah, very much. What a great letter. I hope we're learning the value of just loving our kids and taking an interest. And I like what she said about, you know, it's not so much teaching them. I've got to cram something new down their throat, but it's the way I treat them and the way I love them and the way I show them that I care. And I think that comes back to being the most powerful things that we do with our kids.
In the last podcast, when Kevin, you know, mentioned that it's more caught than taught, I think we're trying to give our kids an education when I think the reality is it's a modeling of what this life looks like. It's not like, here, I'm going to tell you how to live this life, but here, watch daddy, watch mommy as I seek to live honestly before this living God. And if kids see that, you know, they'll forget 1,000 sermons that they heard, but they'll remember seeing mommy or daddy on their knees in genuine, open honesty before God. Or when trouble hits, how we deal with it. Do we ignore it? Do we run from it? Do we protect the kids from it? Or do we walk them through it with us?
Absolutely. And I love her comment about, you know, we dropped out of that thing because it was costing us our family. So many people are looking for one of those Sunday morning clubs to save their family. Here's a couple that stepped out. Remind me of a couple that we met a few years ago in Ventura who had two young girls and a young son, and he was a youth director of a large club down in southern, further south in Southern California here. And his wife came to him one day and said, I'm leaving. And not the marriage, but leaving the church where he was employed as the youth guy. And he said, why? And she said, don't you see, this is destroying our family. And it was a real eye-opener to him, and he ended up leaving with her, and they've gone on an incredible journey together. But the same reality they caught, something is wrong here, and it's not helping our kids. It's in the environment they were in. I think particularly, they talk about being in pastoral ministry. When you have the responsibility of managing all that machinery, you know how much time you spend away from your kids. Every one of us who've done it knows. And you feel like it may be a sacrifice for the kingdom, and you're not going to do it. You're going to try and protect it as best you can, but the kids know it. Kids pick it up.
Yeah, and frankly, I personally was profoundly blind to it because, you know, here I am, quote, doing the Lord's work. It's like, honey, we're trying to advance the kingdom. I had no concept being involved as thoroughly and as driven as thoroughly as we were in everything that was going on, and it was fruitful and wow, great. I had no idea what I was missing at home. I had no idea the lament, the genuineness of the lament in my wife when she was kind of going like, yeah, but you're not here. And I'm going like, well, yeah, I am. And it's like, the reality is the moments, the change, having sort of been jettisoned out of that, and now I am home and available, what I didn't recognize is that there are precious moments that I can't manufacture. I can only be available to.
That's exactly right.
When my kids open the window of their world and welcome me in. I can want to have that happen every night, but that doesn't happen every night.
And you can't schedule them on family nights or family days.
No.
These happen spontaneously.
Yeah, and it's like if I'm there and I can recognize the moment when they're letting me into their world and they're sharing out of the genuineness of their heart, whether it's because something's fantastic or whether because their heart is really hurting, I have to be available to those moments. And those are the moments in which the shaping takes place. But if I come in there and try to rearrange the furniture of their world, I won't be invited back in.
I'm not safe.
And I just think the reality is so oftentimes it is the busyness, the overscheduledness. I mean, I can watch our own son, and I got some great little athletes in our family, but we can become absolutely raggedly busy because of having to be here, there, and everywhere because of good activities. And then I can watch on a weekend where there is nothing. It's like I can watch the heart of my son just open up like a flower because he's relaxing. And I'm just going like, can we all stop and just make a mental note here? These abundance of good things may not be good things in their abundance.
Yeah. And Kevin talked about that, making space in our lives and saying no to some things. And we don't have to be as busy as the culture says we need to be to give our kids a leg up on everything. I watch so many parents from getting their kids in the right athletics to the right school to manipulating everything for their child, thinking they're doing their child a favor. In the long run, it may not turn out that way at all. We also heard from Corey up in Boise, Idaho. Corey had written this a little bit before the show. I'm going to pull out some of that letter. But after the podcast, he wrote this. The discussion was fabulous. It hit right at the heart of what brought myself and several others I know out of the institution. I really like the idea of letting the kids have their own responsibility before God and how they relate to Him. Age 12 is probably about right. I'm going to talk to my wife about that as our oldest is just now turning 12. Is God okay with this? What an awesome thing for children to be asking. That's so much encouragement. And he also, a letter he gave us before the podcast came out, but after we had already recorded it, he had sent out an email that said, one of the primary things that brought us together, there's a group of eight families that kind of gather. They've got tons of children below age 12 and two new ones about to be born. So one of the primary things that brought us together and out of the various institutional gatherings was the desire to raise our children to know Jesus. Inside the box, we saw the destructiveness of youth groups as they indulge the flesh of immature youth. We experienced the division of family as each age group was shuttled off to age-segregated programs. We saw the failure of the system to train fathers and parents to raise their own children. There's the fax machine. Ultimately, we saw the institutions encouraging parental abdication as they tried to offer or even mandate participation in their programs. During the summer of 2004, we began gathering in a local park, and I saw a beautiful picture of what can happen when families come together to know the Savior. All of the children played together and enjoyed relating to one another. It was a beautiful thing to see the young and old all playing in unity and not worrying about their age differences. In our culture, it's nearly a miracle to see the teens relating to the younger children and having relationships with them. He says, sure, we have babies that cry and kids that sometimes are not respectful when others are talking, but rather than shuffle them out of the way, we love them and parent them. As they grow in an environment that values them, they are learning and growing into maturity as people, as well as faith and hope. For us, the kids are a real priority and a significant reason why we continue to gather regularly. Corey, what a great letter.
Yeah, that just sounds like such a healthy environment in which kids can grow up and learn to relate to one another, to God, and what this journey is about. Because, I mean, it's in the context of real life.
And I've been to so many home groups and home gatherings as I've traveled around, and people get together for a meal. You know what always amazes me is how, when we gather for a meal, you end up with a kid's table where all the kids are sitting alone, and the adults are sitting around the table having their adult talk, and you're missing the best part of the whole deal. There's something about us that just naturally gravitates that direction. I think it takes a conscious choice on our part. I know a few of the household groups that we were involved with at various seasons, we consciously said we will not have a children's table. And we've noticed some nights where we kind of morphed into that. The kids would kind of be outside in the patio eating around the ping pong table, and the adults would be inside eating. We'd go, hold it a minute, this isn't good. And so we'd all go outside and hang around the ping pong table, or mix it up next time, make sure the kids were there. Because that interaction, I think the involvement of non-parent adults in the lives of growing children is one of the most important things that community does. And it's not Sunday school lessons, and it's not the flannel graph, it's not that. It's that there's children that know that Wayne takes an interest in them as people who are not my kids. And that has been valuable for our children. We watched our kids grow up with adults who... We had one couple that would come over. They were newly married, didn't have kids yet. They came over for dinner a couple nights to join us. They'd come in and say, how long till dinner? It's about 30 minutes. I said, okay, see you later. And they would go up in our kids' rooms. And for the first half hour, they were hanging out with our kids that were 9, 10, 11, 12 at the time. And that profoundly impacted our kids. So much so that when Julie got to about 16, 17, one time she was having a real struggle with something. Sarah and I were out of town. We were back on the East Coast, and we called. She was in tears, and we just said, you know, is there anybody you could call and just, you know, ask them to, you know, take you out for a milkshake or something? And it was the wife of that couple who had been in our home at times, and she went out to grab a milkshake with her in the afternoon. And I'll tell you what, she came back transformed. And so those relationships that Corey's describing, and I think a big part of just relational community is, let's be together as families, and let's not break off into just adult discussions and child kids playing or watching videos. Let's keep that real and keep the kids as part of the family.
Kids are an absolutely essential ingredient to keep something real. They don't have the tendency to religiously pretend.
Right.
I mean, there is just a cutthroat honesty that they don't mind telling, Dad was mad the other day.
what?
It's like there's an honesty there. And I do think what you're underscoring, the value of another adult having an interest in my child is profound. I mean, I know that Kelly and I have enjoyed the benefit of watching a lot of young adults that we used to pastor sort of grow up and emerge. And the nice thing is, they saw our kids being born. They do have a connection of natural relationship to our kids. And for many of them, it's continued. And so, I'm watching the benefit that my kids are getting, because they do have folks that, there's one guy named Doug that, the kids basically figured that was Daddy's brother. That's how close to our family he is. But that's how involved in their life he was. And I mean, it's made a profound difference in the life of our kids. When Kelly and I just, we had taken a little kind of second honeymoon break, about a month ago, and went back down to Mexico. And we left our kids with a newly married young couple that I just married. And it's like, we knew it was going to be a challenge for everybody, a challenge for us to go, a challenge for them, and a great challenge for the kids. And it was. I mean, each one of them went through their little meltdown of us not being there. Sure. And a different time. But just the process of having to work that out and to access God in the midst of that, for our Jared, our oldest, to have to kind of access God for himself on behalf of his younger brother and sister when they're struggling. It's like the growth that took place Because it wasn't just mommy and daddy constantly, but the involvement of others was profound. The impact that it had on the couple that watched our kids, they're still talking about it. We hear from it from other people that we know they've talked to. They just go like, this whole thing's fantastic.
Even the secular world is recognizing that. Some of the ed conferences I do for education, they're talking about the community assets for youth to help at-risk youth thrive. They're saying of the 42 community assets that can help kids that aren't getting it from their parents or aren't getting it from the culture, the most of all the 42 community assets, the one that makes the most difference is a caring relationship with a non-parent adult. That seems to really validate who a person is. I know when Sarah and I were raising our kids and we'd go to parent-teacher night at school, they would always ask us, can we ask you a question about your kids? And we'd say, yeah. And they'd say, your kids seem the most unaffected by peer pressure of any kids that we know. We want to know what you're doing. And the only thing Sarah and I could attribute it to was the fact that because our kids' lives were validated by other adults that knew them, enjoyed them, had fun with our kids, took an interest in their life, then their peer group didn't seem to have the same level of power over them because they weren't looking for their validation or their identity to come and the acceptance of their peers.
Wow.
That's something we could attribute it to, but we've been really big on intergenerational relationships, as we call them, for a long time. So much so, we'd be in a praise gathering in a home, we'd say, you know what, don't have your two-year-old on your lap during a praise time, really, because that's about a power struggle and a fight, and you want them to participate and look good. And all. Have somebody else's two-year-old on your lap. Get your two-year-old on someone else's lap. And when I have, little Jimmy on my lap, who's not my child, he and I are playing through that praise time. We're having a good time. I haven't got all this thing about wanting him to look like he knows what's going on and he's about ready to prophesy at the age of three and speak in tongues or something. We're just enjoying some time in God's presence together. And so I think that's good not only for us parents to be involved, but I think it's good for all of us to think about when we're in a home, when we're with other people, don't make the children a non-entity. Don't even just kind of polite hi and then get on to the real discussion with the adult. Take an interest in kids when you're around them. Jesus, constantly they were trying to chase kids off of him. You remember that?
Yeah.
Get the kids out of here. There was something about Jesus that engaged kids. He enjoyed being with the kids. And I think that's a great
example.
There's
only a couple of times he really got mad in the scriptures, and one of them is when they're trying to chase the kids away. It's like they're an interruption or a distraction from the real kingdom business, and I mean, he constantly put them at the center of the kingdom.
Boy, and if anybody's ever been in one of those Sunday morning club settings and their kid made some noise during service and the eyeballs, not welcome here. In fact, we've got rules and places to hide them, people. And I think it's a great discussion because we really, treating kids just like other people who are part of the body of Christ, because that's in fact what they are.
They're just littler people.
And you take an interest in their lives. They're not going to come and ask me, you know, how's my latest book coming or anything like that. But you take an interest in their lives, school, projects, refrigerator art, whatever they've got going on, it opens doors into kids' lives. And that becomes valuable just in being God's family together.
Yeah, before we just take a break, a little plug for moms. I do know that watching my own wife raising three kids, sometimes there's an absolute craving desire that they have for adult conversation. And so when you do have an opportunity to get with others, on behalf of the moms who are constantly with the kids, you know, most oftentimes that's the setting, maybe just sort of give them a blessing by proactively taking over the interest in their kids. And giving the moms a break or a chance to talk at a different level that is a need that gets met in their soul. Because I do think that a lot of times I watch most of the really conscientious moms who are actively parenting, they do struggle in any other setting if their kids are there because they're still actively focused on the thing that takes up the bulk of their heart. They just need a little help getting distracted from that, realizing that someone else is saying, hey, I'll cover that.
Sucking up to the moms, aren't
we? Yep. See, that way if I use bad language, somehow I'm okay.
We've got one other letter here, Brad, that I don't know if I'll get through this. It's actually from my daughter, Julie, who listens to the podcast, believe it or not. And heard the one on Children Unplugged. This is her comment. She said, I wanted to tell you how much I love the Children Unplugged podcast. Of course, I laugh right along with you and Brad and obviously love the Chipper story. I told you, it's the Mr. Feely of our neighborhood, this Chipper story. But I just loved what you both had to say about kids who are living out of the box. It was great to listen to as a kid who went on that journey. And now as a mom with a child who I want to learn about the wonderful relationship father wants with her as she gets older. I don't think I've had a chance to tell you yet how much I appreciate what you and Brad are doing and how much I love listening to these podcasts. I'm so glad that you're doing it and so proud to be part of this family. Ah, Julie.
Warm fuzzies everywhere.
Julie, you are a sweetie. Thank you so much. And it's fun watching her now parent and love this. Oh, I'm having so much fun. Not just being a grandpa. Watching my daughter mother is just a hoot. I am having so much fun with that. So.
That's fantastic.
And she may actually come and start working for me a couple hours a day to help with some of the office details around live stream. Mm-hmm. So that's a little more Amy time. I'm not sure I'll get any more work done because I'll probably play with Amy.
We'll more stories to share, though.
Doing on Amy's nap time. But thanks, Julie. That's she's a wonderful kid. We've had a great time loving her and still do.
Well, we got another email from our East Coast correspondent. He said, you can keep me anonymous on this one. If I get any more airplay, I'll have to start my own podcast.
Is this so. Dave again?
Wayne outed you, Dave. I didn't. I was going to keep your cover.
Dave's a good correspondent. So, and we love this. I love what he's asking here.
So he writes, he says, I love this message, especially the comedy connection of Cummings and Jacobson. Brad, did you really say pissed off? And it's like, yes, I did. He said, too funny,
but refreshing
to be real.
Come on.
And he goes, okay, here's what pees me off.
What? Another? I'm going to add that to the list.
Maybe more of what has frustrated me. I listened to you guys talk about the wonder-filled moments in the life of you and your children. Awesome it is to have been able to get on the ground floor, so to speak, of witnessing the forming of a child's spiritual foundation. Incredible to hear about those moments you've both had. Okay, so I've not been so as fortunate. Me and countless others, I'm sure. I know the grass always appears greener on someone else's path, but I'd love to hear some thoughts on what you can do with their teen, young adult children where parents like me didn't have the godly sense to bring them up in the wonderful ways that you guys shared. He goes on to say, he says, I've lived in Christ in front of my family outside the walls of the organized church. Club is a more appropriate term for sure.
Oh, we're going to
get to that. For 5 years now. He said, for a time, my wife and son joined me in the learning to live apart from it. We enjoyed the simplicity of just being with others outside the traditional walls. But for the past 3 years, they have chosen not to walk alongside me in fellowshipping with others as I do. And I've learned to let go. So since that time, I feel like I haven't had much to give, particularly to my son. Maybe it's the old Sunday school needs to teach him what he needs mentality that still resides in me. I do understand what Kevin shared in this life that is caught more than taught, but I just wonder how I can implement some practical ways of sharing this life, especially with my son, with the time remaining while he's still at home. I want him to have an awesome and growing relationship with Jesus. It's taken me 50 years to experience mine, and I don't want him to have to wait as long. If you can digest all what is said here in a single question, please do. I just wanted to give you some background as to where I've been personally. I hope it makes sense. What's even better? 3 minutes later, he says, okay, no sooner as I posted, I sensed the Lord giving me his easy answer. Ask him what practical ways I could share him with my son. When in doubt, ask God. Duh. But I would still love to hear your thoughts. Dave, that's great.
I do want Dave to know he's not alone. I meet a lot of people on this journey. And was it Sarah that said, parenting is raw, messy, and rough. And anybody's been through it. I mean, even reading Julie's letter, there have been so many times in our families going through some very, very difficult moments and struggles with kids. That's just part of this process. So that's wonderful. But what can we do if we've got older kids, maybe teens, maybe early 20s, maybe already out of the house, and they don't seem to have a spiritual passion, and yet we want to somehow help them have that?
You know,
what are your thoughts?
You can't force that on kids. You can't make it. If you do, you run the risk of it becoming a performance kind of thing. That I think, frankly, kids respond to that sense of pressure to perform for. And yet, you know, I think the reality is that there are different stages. I mean, toddlers are different from elementary kids, and elementary kids are different from teenagers. I think probably the most valuable thing is just the establishing and the reconnecting of genuine relationship, going out and having fun. The only way you're going to have a voice in a kid's life is if you're there. And if you're there as a friend, as someone who is genuinely interested in their life, not so as to get a voice, because I think they can smell that.
They smell agenda. We were talking about, you know, koinonia killers, this agenda thing. One of the things that parents often have with their kids is all kinds of agenda. So I'm going to sit down and have some quality time with my kid, but I'm trying to get them to get to the God questions, or I'm trying to move them toward some kind of behavior modification that I want them to embrace. And kids smell that. You're right. A mile away.
I think when we try to impose something as opposed to, you know, I mean, spend some time praying and say, God, please help me observe and be ready and available at the moments. It's like when the flower opens, when it's natural. And it is there. It is because kids are totally spiritually interested. They may not have the same lingo or the same language, but do they care? Are they asking the proverbial questions? Why am I here? What is life? Yes, they are. And it's learning to just be available in the dialogue of that in their heart. I mean, you know, my kids love, you know, PlayStation. I mean, they love, you know, but one of the best things I can do is when they want to go out and shoot baskets, I'll go out there and shoot baskets with them. When they want to sit down and play video games, even though they smoke me and it feels really stupid, it is fun to enter into their world.
And they love smoking you, don't they?
They do. You talk about building confidence. When they can just put dad in his tracks, it's like you go like, okay, I'm officially old now.
Well, we play those things 10 hours a day. How can you possibly compete with that?
But it's their little world. And when you recognize that and validate those things, the opportunities for investment will be readily afforded you. So, you know, Dave and everybody else, I just think it's the time spent because, you know, as a college pastor for a number of years, I saw the outworking of what I'd have to say is a bunch of failed parenting, even though a lot of people meant well. And I think the reality is I saw in each and every one of those kids a longing for a better relationship with their mom or their dad. I don't think a kid would ever say, I don't want that. You might have to work through some pain or some whatever, you know, if there's some barriers built up. But virtually every young person I ever met, they know the place that the voice of a parent has in their life. And they want it. And they want it for blessing. And so I think just knowing that it's like a tractor beam, you have a God-appointed place in their life.
Yeah, they want that, I think, as long as they know. What I think about older teens and young 20s, these are not kids who enjoy being manipulated.
No.
As if any of us do.
They can see that.
So I think when you get that agenda out of the way, I'm not trying to manipulate them to be more Christian or to be more godlike. Then you get to their questions because it'll come up. World hunger. There's all kinds of things in the news. The kids will get into a discussion if they're not going to get a bunch of religious plastic answers. If they get those, they won't even ask the question.
Yeah.
But if you can have the dialogue with them, I think the real challenge... kids at your age, that your kids are, Brad, are very much wanting to be with mom and dad, very much wanting to have time with them. That changes going through those teen years. Because all their activities and interests, I mean, it's just not cool to play video games with dad when the neighbor from down the street's playing. Becomes less cool. But there still are ways, and I think Dave said about asking God for those ways with your individual children is real important. There are ways to connect with your kid, doing activities, things they love, without the agenda, just being with them, taking an interest in them, not coaching them anymore, not trying to fix things so much. I know both my kids turned 18. I told them I was done with both of them. I was done trying to fix them. Hadn't done a great job, but was done. And I'd always be their dad and always wanted to be involved with their lives, but I wouldn't force myself on them in anything. And I don't anymore. I wait for them. Now, they ask me more things about decisions they're making than they ever did before when I start saying, I'm not a fixer, but I will be a friend to you. I'll be your father. I'll give you my thoughts about things, but it's your choice totally. And the more, we talked about this a little bit last time, the more responsibility we give to them at older ages, the more you become a hero, counselor, advisor again, because they don't see you as the one trying to push them into a box they don't want to crawl into.
Being able to show the transparency, the honest struggle that this journey is, I think that is probably one of the most profound lessons, because if they recognize, you know, daddy's got questions, he doesn't have it all figured out, and here's what daddy does when he doesn't have it all figured out. You know, does life melt down, or is there a place that daddy goes to try to find help. And it's not just in spiritual overtones of, I go have my time with God. He sees that there are other people in our life that we reach out to as well that say, hey, help us.
Yep. And they also know when we're frustrated, and they know when we're struggling, and might as well let them in on that too, just like we would other folks. And I think that helps that journey take place. One of the things that I think would really help parents, I've noticed since, you know, the Dobson books and the whole parenting mystique that we've gotten into for the last 20, 30 years, all kinds of ways to parent, the right way to parent. And we live under this, I think, mythology that if I did everything right with my kids, they will come out and complete and whole human beings at the age of 18. And I'd like to just take that little myth and, you know, hook some dynamite up to it and blasting caps.
What are you saying, Wayne? You mean there's not a formula for this?
No, a formula. There's no perfect parent. If we get it all right, who's gotten it all right? The best parents I know will tell you that, oh, there's so many things. I look back at my kids. There's so many things I'd like to change right now. Parenting is rough, messy, and raw. And God takes us and gets us through it. But the last thing you want, I think, in the family of God, is you want parents competing with each other as to how their kids look.
And oh, wow.
These kids are involved in these activities, and they're going to this school and off to YWAM, and so, ooh, that's a great family. And my kid, you know, pregnant out of wedlock and, you know, experimenting with drugs or something. And that parent, I think a big part of the battle is that parent feels like they're a failure. Now, how do you start from that? I'm already a failure as a parent. How do I impact my kid? And my kid embarrasses me, so I don't want to talk about it with other people. I have met so many parents on this journey that struggle with that. And I would love to just say, you know what? Let's blow the myth out of the water. First of all, God was the perfect parent in the garden, and he had the two most innocent kids in the world, and they chose their own way.
They screwed up.
The parent, what? What's those S-words? The parable of the prodigal father. Here's a father who lets his son go and pays for his debaucherous lifestyle. He pays for him to go into sin. And he provided the money for him to go please every whim he had so that he could come to the end of himself and possibly have this need for God and have this need for his father again. And I tell parents, man, if your kids are going through a rough spot in the road, they don't need your love any less. My goodness, they need your love and concern even more. Don't cut them off because they're dating the wrong guy. They're experimenting with things. Yes, they know you don't approve already. I don't think any kid's blinded about those kinds of issues.
They can smell that too.
And plus, we've already told them 500 times. That's stupid. Stop doing it. And loving and taking interest in your kids doesn't mean you sit there and say, oh, this is great. I'm really supporting you in what you're doing. It's being honest and real with them and saying, I care about you. And I care about you. I care about our relationship more than I care about your performance. One distressing letter I got, a year ago, some guy had written me from Pennsylvania, and he wasn't letting his daughter come home for Christmas from college. And because she was dating the wrong guy. He didn't tell me why, what he didn't like about this guy, but he was dating a guy that they had forbidden her, his word, to date. Now, she's 20 years old.
You can guarantee a relationship out of that.
And my thought is, do we not read Romeo and Juliet? You know? I mean, for a parent to forbid a relationship only makes it that much more enticing.
Guaranteed.
So now he was forbidding her to come home for the holidays because he had four other daughters at home and she didn't want her rebellion passed on to the other kids. And man, I wrote him back and I said, don't you see what you've done? You've said to her now, your performance is more important to me than our relationship. Even if my children are dating the wrong person, I want to still be in my child's life as a friend and father and one who takes concern and interest. I don't want to be on the outside saying, no, you got to change that before I'll relate to you. I think that's a big mistake that we make with our older kids. And I wrote him back and told him that. And I never forget, his response back to me was almost humorous. He said, here, I write you asking for support, and you don't undergird what I'm doing at all. And I wrote him back and said, no, you didn't ask for my support. You asked for what I thought. If you wanted support, send me pom-poms. I can do cheers. But, it's sad because I know he really, you know, parents out there on that kind of a thing, obviously they're putting their whole thing on the line, and they're hoping that forbidding their daughter to come home will be the impetus she needs to change. The fact is that never works. Bringing greater pressure to bear, compromising our relationship with them as part of the pressure to get them to do the behaviors we want to do, always flames out. A tremendous blaze of unglory. So don't do it. Love your kids. Be honest with them. Say, you know, I'm not nuts about this going on. You're like, yeah, be honest with them. The kids expect you to be honest. But keep loving them. Put the relationship first, for Pete's sake.
Yeah, when you focus on the whole behaviors and everything else and trying to raise your kid to the standard, I think the kids end up thinking that there's a sense of image that's more important than me.
Yeah.
And I think there's a natural offense that takes place that I just go like, I don't think I'm valuable. To have that voice, to have a place of being able to shape the life of somebody else, whether it's a kid or somebody else, they've got to know that they matter.
Yeah.
Just as they are to you.
Yeah.
And if they do, trust me, you'll be a part of the dialogue that directs their heart. But if that's only going to happen if they really do. And I think so oftentimes, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know why some parents have kids when it looks like they sort of treat them like an imposition.
The whole proverbial pastor's kids that are always, you know, in more trouble. And I think part of it, raising kids, and when I had that kind of title in my life at the time, you do think your kids are a reflection of your ministry, and you do know they can undermine what you do, and you do subtly put, even if you're trying not to, put more pressure on your kids to look right and do good, and it's wrong. I mean, unfortunately, God yanked us out of it early enough to help adjust some of that in our home. All these fears kind of reside in the thing that, again, going back to this myth, if we do everything right, our kids will come out complete and whole. And to realize that, no, that isn't necessarily true.
Uh-uh.
And none of us are going to get it completely right anyways. And I think that's why when kids go through very difficult things, there's a woman on my list with the live stream that dealt with the suicide of a 24-year-old daughter.
Oof.
And how people that she had been in, quote-unquote, church with had pushed her out because they didn't know how to deal with that. And part of it is, I mean, I'm sure there's not a person that didn't feel compassion for her. But the other time, there's also somebody that wants to blame her, because what we all want to believe is, if I do it right, I won't have to face the suicide of a 24-year-old daughter. So instead of being able to support her as she's struggling through the death of her daughter, we've got to push her aside because
she failed.
There's something wrong there. Yeah, I want to believe she really did it wrong. I've probably shared this before here, but when I took flying lessons as a kid, I noticed around the airport, whenever there was a plane accident, all the pilots assume it's pilot error. Because they want, it's not that they hate other pilots. That's not the point. The point is, when you're up in one of those small planes, you know how vulnerable you are. And what you want to believe is, if I do everything right, this plane can't crash. But that isn't true.
Wow.
You can do everything right and something go wrong. We don't want to believe that. We don't want to believe it about parenting. We don't want to believe it about, you know, flying airplanes. And I think it's a big mistake. And we put a lot of pressure on each other to raise kids that look good. Instead of, you know what, let's take an interest in our kids. God is at work. I was saying this to Dave and every other parent that's got kids that aren't where they would love them to be on this journey. Say, you know what, God's at work in your child. He's never stopped. He's at work with them, and he's moving them toward a moment. That moment may be 3 or 4 years away. It doesn't have to be tomorrow. God's not asking you to do something to make them different. He's just saying love them as he works in them. And watch what God does.
You know, as you're talking, I couldn't help but thinking that not only are we afraid that, how could it be that if I do everything right, it's not going to turn out all right? I think a lot of times, and I hate to open a can of worms right as we're closing down, but I think people are frightened of a God who would actually allow that. That I am doing everything right, and how could God allow it not to turn out like my dream come true? And I think that...
Even if I'm not doing everything right, I'm at least doing the best I can.
And I think there's an offense that it's like, how can it not turn out right? And it's like, you know what? I don't live in that universe. That is not the God to whom I think we're relating. It is raw. It is messy. It is rough. And it's real. And I think we got to deal with just the reality of what's behind some of our performance notions that we apply to much of life. Because it's not just parenting. It's like, gosh, if I do everything right, I won't have any problems with my job. I won't lose it. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff that it's like God's real in our midst, and it doesn't all work out like you suppose.
Doesn't religion feed off of our blessings from God are qualified by our performance?
Yeah.
That's the world we're talking about collapsing. But you're right. I think that is a whole other show. And I think we'll be coming back to that topic up the road. We'll also be coming back to talk about kids probably over and over again. It's a good subject.
Thanks for traveling with us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd appreciate your questions or feedback by email or at our blog at thegodjourney.com. Or you can call 24 hours a day to our comment line at 805-626-4212.